Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm Dave Taylor, and always pleased to be joined by Larry Heron, the parent coach. Hello, Larry.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
You know, it kind of reminded when I said that, Larry Heron, the parent coach, it kind of reminded me of, you know, when we were talking about sounding like, sports DJs, you know, when we had Brian on, it was pretty funny. it almost sounded like a sports show for a little while there. But, no, well, you know, as listeners know that listen on a regular basis, you know, Larry Heron is a very accomplished mental health professional, works with families and children, and we are very pleased to have the fellow who makes Dr. Phil look pretty bad most of the time on Biff Radio. And I can get as much hate mail as people want to send about that, you know, as it pertains to Dr. Phil fans. I'm a Dr. Phil fan. I think he's a great guy, but he doesn't have as much hair as Larry does. And as much knowledge about parental alienation or some of those other issues either. But I'll tell you what, Larry, your boy is something else, DJ, because as you know, Larry and I, or yeah, Larry, Rebecca and I came out on Saturday. He was testing for his orange belt. Is that what
he
was?
He was indeed. He was indeed.
Karate.
He did a fine job.
He did. He did. he broke some boards, and I got some really cool action shots with that camera.
Dave, you were amazing with that camera. I appreciate it because I had to be up there helping the kids and, you know, doing some coaching with that. And of course, with DJ, when he got up to do the bag and do the board and break that board, I had to be holding it. And so my hands were kind of tied up. And I think you took better pictures than I could have anyways. You did a good job with it. Do you do weddings, bar mitzvahs?
Well, I've been known to do a special occasion, absolutely. You know, but the best part of that special occasion is I got to do it for you two guys and to see what joy you and DJ got to share over that whole experience together. And that is what it is all about. That's where the rubber meets the road as far as parent-child relationships, as far as I'm concerned, Larry. And that is the grassroots, you know, meaning of Best Interest of the Family Radio. It's all about relationships with parents and children and furthering those, you know, laying down those bricks, you know, for that legacy that you're setting out for your son or daughter, right?
Well, no question about it. You know, and Dave, it really doesn't matter what the activity is, whether you're taking karate with your child or whether you're, you know, out there helping him or her with baseball, or if it's, you know, football that you take in with them. It's more about the fact that it's the two of you or the four of you, whatever the case may be, working together to accomplish something. And it's that the two of you find some sort of a niche to interact in that they get something out of. And it's that experience that, hey, my dad or my mom thinks I'm important enough to take the time and dedicate that time to me and me alone. I think you know the story that when I initially got DJ engaged in this, he wasn't more than about 5-6 years old. Actually, I think he had just turned 6. It wasn't 6 more than a few weeks. And so I really didn't anticipate he was going to want to really stay with karate very long and that he'd probably lose focus, lose attention, and any kind of motivation to do it. He was certainly motivated initially. So I took it with him. I thought, well, you know, I'll get my old scrappy self up and get back into it. And long enough for him to get engaged and feel comfortable in it. And then I'd drop back and just sit on the sidelines and cheer him on. Because certainly, you know, I've had my day in the sun and it was a few moons ago. I really don't need to do this. But when I announced to him, Dave, that that's what I was going to do, man, did he protest. He said, Dad, I thought this was something we were going to do together. I don't want you to stop. I want you to keep doing this with me. I thought we were going to do it together. Well, you know what? That's all I needed to hear. So we're breaking boards and throwing punches and blocks and kicks and and doing it all together. And, you know, of course, he has no issue with it. His little body is flexible as a rubber band. And, you know, in some ways it's been good for me too, though, because it's good exercise. I encourage it for anybody to get out there. It's obviously good self-defense, but it's also great cardiovascular, great for muscled exterior and flexibility and balance. It's really karate is a great thing. So it's been good all the way around. I'm real happy with it. And if I can put a plug in, Dave, that's Farmington Martial Arts in Farmington, Michigan. Farmington Martial Arts is located at 10 Mile Orchard Lake Road. They have a website. Jeff and Connie Duncan do a phenomenal job, and it's a great place. I highly recommend them.
Yeah, they do a great job, and I'm glad you mentioned them, so now I can send them a bill for that advertising. You can help pay some of the bills around here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I wanted to put a shout out to some of the folks on the board. You know, there was Daryl, and then my mom's out there,
This is Taylor. Your mom mom make the best potato salad in the world, and absolutely big shout out to Mrs. Taylor.
So yeah, and of course we have one of our favorite advocates on the line for us to bring him on, and that would be Robert Kerr, and he is with the Dads and Moms PAC. The Political Action Committee here in Michigan that operates primarily in the Lansing area, but you know, certainly a statewide organization, and they certainly do their share of advocating for families and children in this
they
state.
They absolutely do, no question.
These guys are a prime example of what citizen advocates, citizen legislators can do. I'm telling you, they do a bang up job between Michael Saxton and Robert Kerr and the rest of the pack. And these guys are movers and shakers. They really get her done.
You know what, Dave? If you look up front line in the battle, you'll see Mike Saxton and Robert Kerr's picture right there. Because I couldn't agree with you more. They are working it every day, and the legislators know them, respect them. They're a couple of men of integrity who have absolutely found their way around the political system and have become seasoned veterans themselves. In fact, we might ought to talk about at some point during the interview that Robert Kerr himself is now running for county commissioner up there in Ingham County.
Yeah, well, this isn't his first rodeo. You know, he takes a bite at the apple, you know. He walks the talk, you know.
Absolutely.
He gets out there and he works the politics personally, and he works with the PAC, and he collaborates with other political parties, and he's out there working it and making paving the road for families. And I think we might have Robert on the line, and he might be getting it out of his car or something.
We're just getting ready to pull out, but yeah, we're making a run of things, running a lot of errands tonight. Just met a little earlier at a campaign stop with our soon-to-be Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly.
Absolutely.
A gentleman of the highest character. He's the current sponsor of the Equal Parenting Bill, House Bill 5114. Unfortunately, because of the legislator from right here in East Lansing where I'm currently parked, that's gone nowhere for a year and a half now. So it'll die here at the end of this year, as all bills that
right.
did not make it through the whole process by the end of the legislature. So one of the things I met with, that I discussed with Brian while I met with him today, was ensuring that we get this is basically a biennial bill. Every 2 years we've brought this up. This year I want to make this one of the very first bills that gets introduced, and we want to put, you know, with Brian as Lieutenant Governor, I'm sure we'll have a little more pressure from the executive office to make sure that we get equal parenting on the books here in Michigan. Here in Ingham County, we have at our front of the court, they have a pre-printed form. We hear all about how every case is determined on its own set of facts. Yet here at Ingham County, they have pre-printed by the ream a standard parenting time agreement that says you will get every other weekend and one night a week. If they've pre-printed that standardized agreement, how are they determining that case based on its own facts? They've predetermined the case before you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see that we get equal parenting where the de facto norm is not every other weekend and one night a week, but 50% of the time. Not saying mom's not going to have her share of the time, not saying dad's not going to. Both parents will share in the upbringing of the child unless unfit, unwilling, or unable comes into play.
Now, Robert, what kind of objections are you meeting up with I understand, you know, groups like the association that may be objecting to this type of legislation?
Well, probably one of the biggest objections we see every year, obviously judges, they don't like being told how to run their court. They like to tell you they're God. You will live and die by their word. Even bigger than them, the domestic violence advocacy groups. They, and falsely so, state that this will victimize victims of domestic violence. Not true. If a parent rightfully and legally has been found to be a child abuser or, you know, a drug addict, whatever, something that actually jeopardizes the child, that parent will not get equal custody. If it's merely an allegation, an unproved allegation, that will not hinder it. I'm not sure. There's one aspect I don't necessarily like about it. If it's found that an allegation was false, under this legislation, it would obviously have to go through the court system, but I suspect if it's found that a parent files a false allegation, I don't think that would meet the standard to say that parent filing the false allegation should suffer any loss. And in fact, I guess I would argue that parent should still get equal parenting time. There should be other justice paid out if a parent's found to file false. Maybe they should be paying all the legal expenses and attorney's costs and everything. But we feel that unless the child is truly in danger, that it should be equal parenting.
Well, it was strongly suggested by our guest last week, wasn't it, Larry? You were talking about parental alienation type of legislation.
Right.
It was strongly suggested by Ken Mazur, who was an associate of yours, who was on our show last week, that there should be accountability measures built in to legislation, to say, for example, if parenting time has been interfered with, then the other parent who's interfering should lose some parenting time.
Some parenting time, right. He was actually saying criminalize parental alienation once it's proved, and that accountability factors should definitely be built in, and that losing parenting time or money should be a starting point. And I don't disagree. I think that the reason people do things basically is because they can get away with them. That's the bottom line. You know, you're not going to legislate a conscience. You're not going to even educate a conscience to any great degree. To some degree, perhaps, you know, normal people who are healthy and want to be what their children need them to be, with the right education, they're going to do the right thing. But people who are vindictive, people who are angry, people who are walking into this thing trying to hurt the other parent, they're going to do whatever they can do to get away with it, and they're going to do whatever they do get away with. Legislation has to come up with structure that, look, we're going to start out even, and it's yours to lose, not yours to win. And then people will stop trying to win. People will stop trying to go back and forth to take something away and bury somebody that the court has said, no, we believe this is what's best for your child, and this is what we're going to do. Stop fighting about it, or it may be you that loses.
Yeah, my own feeling, I don't think we want to jeopardize time with a child as part of the punitive measures. I guess unless it gets to where the one parent is so punitive in trying to do things like interfere with parenting time that a family counselor would say the child is suffering as a result of that alienation, then I could see maybe it needs to go to the degree of affecting the alienating parent's parenting time. But generally, you know, if we were to say you interfere with parenting time, and even the first time, we're going to sacrifice part of your parenting time, it makes us no better than the parties that we're fighting that seek to use parenting time as a tool for financial and other gains.
How do you stop it otherwise, though, Robert, if you don't penalize them for it?
You penalize it, but you don't do it with the children. You do it, you start $100, $200, whatever they find is an effective figure. Second offense, it goes up, $500, $1,000 fine for, and the judge, if we're talking somebody of great means, let's say she's a candidate for office out in California, Carly Fearing, if we were to say, you know, $1,000 isn't even going to phase you. Somebody of that financial mean, and I'm not saying anything bad about Carly, I just have, it's a name that I know people recognize as being a corporate CEO. Her, they might say, okay, if you're going to do it, we'll penalize you $5,000, $100,000. But they can pick a financial amount that is likely to influence the behavior. Or maybe, you know, a weekend in jail or community service.
Mm-hmm.
Something that will bear on it, but something that's not going to adversely affect the parent-child relationship with the parent that is alienating.
And I think that's where it gets kind of dicey. I agree let me rephrase. What you're saying is that definitely penalize, but to kind of pick and choose what's going to be most effective in stopping
right.
the behavior versus negatively impacting the parent-child relationship, because obviously kids need both parents, and they do. They absolutely do. They need it in healthy parenting, but they need both.
Correct.
I agree, but the where it gets tricky, where it gets kind of dicey, is that sometimes it really does depend on any individual situation. There's no magic way of knowing for a particular parent what's going to be most meaningful to them, and what that dynamic is such that, okay, what does this dynamic require to create stabilization in this nonsensical behavior? Sometimes, right from the get-start, it becomes clear that the wrong parent has the lion's share of the time, or that it's the parent that's doing the alienating behavior that needs to lose some influence so that they understand, okay, look, you can't do this. You have to be more responsible, more accountable with your time if you're going to maintain it. And so it's time with the kids that matter. Other parents, you're right. Money seems to be more meaningful to them than anything. And even taking $5 is going to take them to a screeching halt because, my gosh, don't touch my money. It really does come down to that particular parent and or that particular dynamic that you have to kind of look and figure out. But that's not really all that difficult to do if people, judges and legislators and just everybody involved, really wants to take the time to do it. And quite honestly, I think our kids deserve that time. Our kids deserve that effort. And I think we need judges and legislators that'll do more than just pay lip service. They'll actually take that time and make that effort to do so.
Yep. I agree.
So,
now, Robert, help
go
us
ahead,
here, because there might be some listeners. There might be some listeners. You know, that don't know what a political action committee is or what PAC means. Let's go back to grassroots real quick and just kind of burst out for our listeners what a political action committee is and what the Dads and Moms Political Action Committee does.
Okay. Well, as the name implies, political action committees are committees, a group of people that are trying to affect action with either the legislature or the executive branch of government, or possibly even with the judicial branch. In our case, we're trying to affect laws that pertain to family courts and that whole system, primarily through the legislature in Michigan here. But we do touch with Brian Kelly, who's been a great advocate of reforming the family law, likely headed to the governor's office, the lieutenant governor. I expect we'll have more activity coming out of the governor's office in the next term, helping to reform family law and positively affect families throughout Michigan. But what we do, we try to affect laws for custodial and non-custodial parents to improve the system, make it more responsible, more responsive, just more effective overall. In fact, on that, and you touched on accountability earlier, I just read in the paper today a case out of Muskegon where at Friend of the Court, they had a county court employee that had apparently over time been absconding money. They caught her when somebody came in and made a $200 support payment, and somehow that got rang up as a $20 support payment. Had it not been for the fact that this had repeatedly been occurring, they had noticed a whole chain of errors on their counting, that they were able to catch this individual. And it got me thinking, all over government, here in Ingham County, at our county jail, if you go in to take money to an inmate, you have but one choice. There is a kiosk at the front door to the county jail. You pay by whatever means, and that money goes to the inmate. If we can do that at the jails, why can't we do that with Friend of the Court? I personally have, here at Ingham County, when I was passing out literature one day, had somebody come out and realized that he had paid $100. His receipt said 10. I sent him back in and said, you need to make sure right here, right now, that this is corrected. Don't go home and think they'll find the error. They won't. So he went and got it corrected. But, you know, I hear these kind of errors all the time. I don't know how many dozens of individuals I've talked to who have had problems with their accounting at Friend of the Court. In all likelihood, probably is just an innocent error. But I'm sure a percentage of those at whatever county, there are other cases that have not been caught of money being misappropriated. If we go to an ATM-based system with bill acceptors for dollar, for actual currency and credit card capabilities, we could have guaranteed accountability for every transaction. We know that the same day I pay that money, it becomes available to the other parent. When I pay $10, I know I get $10 credited. I don't wind up with a $1 credit or anything. So it got me thinking another aspect of this with this budget. That I would expect that in most counties probably would eliminate the need for one teller. With, I believe, 73 counties? That's 73 people the state can cut off the rolls. It's possible some of the bigger counties, Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, for example, we could probably multiply that number. I suspect there are probably more than one teller that would no longer be needed. Now, we can get rid of those tellers through attrition. Don't fear that some bean counter is going to come in and just chop that job. They can reassign, and when somebody retires, that job now disappears, and we shuffle everybody else's workload because we don't need, because we lightened the workload when the teller was eliminated. We then ratchet it back up as retirements take place and get the workforce back into alignment. In the long term, you have a one-time infrastructure purchase of a kiosk, and you eliminate that ongoing payroll of an employee. So You know, that's just one thought, and that just was the thought that I had today. There's other issues that, you know, that I've been dealing with over time, looking at various issues, but, you know, we've got to make government more affordable, fiscally responsible, and more accountable. And this measure would do that. It would be a start.
Robert, how do you respond to those that try to say, look, there's enough laws on the books right now for shared parenting to be granted every time? It's just that the judges, you know, interpret things how they interpret things and award things the way they award things, but that, quite frankly, you know, there's enough laws already there. Like, for example, the Michigan Parenting Time Statute of, I think it's MCLA 722-27, in the way that parenting time shall be granted to a parent in a frequency, duration, and type reasonably calculated to promote, if I'm remembering this right, a strong relationship between the child and the parent granted parenting time. In some ways,
well,
I suppose that leaves for vague interpretation, but in others, anybody could argue that every other weekend and Wednesday night for dinner isn't enough to do that.
Well, I think when you look at the fact that about 90% of the custody cases, I almost said divorce, but in some cases there never was a marriage involved, 90% of those wind up being one custodial parent, one non-custodial parent. That's a good stat right there. That was 2008 was the last time, and I'm sure the final time that those stats were released, because in January of this year, the requirement to report those figures was eliminated. So that's one factor. Let me back up here. Yeah, the fact that you've got the county has the pre-printed standard parenting time arrangement, again, tells me that, and I'm sure you'd agree, one night a week and every other weekend does not constitute sufficient time to really properly develop a strong parent-child relationship.
Right. So if we have the language on the books, for example, like the Michigan Parenting Time Statute, that states that it shall be, you know, granted to a parent in a frequency, duration, and type reasonably calculated to promote a strong relationship between the child and the parent. And it's generally agreed that every other weekend and Wednesday night for dinner isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
How?
Well, you say that's generally agreed, that apparently the person who's most important here, the judge, apparently does not agree with that. The judge is uniformly.
Some judges do, and some judges don't.
You know, I don't see, short of mandating judges' behavior, I don't see a solution that gets us to the point of something approaching joint custody on a regular basis without mandating the judges and setting a performance standard that you have to show by some, it has been proposed in the currently introduced bills, by a clear and convincing standard that there is just reason to change from equal parenting. If we leave judges open-ended language, time and again we see the judges use that as a venue to create maximum support awards, which gives them the clout they want. They now can affirm that there is a reason for their existence and a reason, a financial basis to maintain their level of authority within the, as the lieutenant governor candidate said, all of government is individual departments trying to control their own little fiefdom, each department knows the more I spend, the more power I have, the more I spend, the more I get next year. if I don't spend it, I lose it every year from this point on. So spend, 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 grow, grow, grow.
Yeah, God forbid that you want to, you know, be fiscally responsible and perhaps even save the taxpayers' money in your department. You know,
well,
that might mean less
taxpayers. Funding. I used to work in the automotive field, and I tell you, GM, Ford are the same way. Every department has a budget, and at the end of the fiscal year, they're like a pack of dogs fighting over a scrap of meat, looking for purchases they can make to spend out any funds that they have. Because again, even within the corporate world, they know use it or lose it.
Right. Well,
no, that's been like that since almost the beginning of time. I agree. So how do we affect that paradigm?
Again, we change the de facto standard so that there is equal parenting time, and put the burden on the judge to show by a clear and convincing standard, and they can try some different standards. You know, they can try to get that changed if they find truly that is not best for the children, but start with a clear and convincing standard that there was a real legitimate reason to deviate from that. Not simply a financial motive, and that maximum child support yields our court maximum power, maximum financial benefit.
And in that regard, Robert, you're really not taking a judge's discretion away, because basically if they have discretion that, look, joint custody
it no longer is mere discretion. They have, like every other person in the courtroom on that day, they have a burden of proof.
Mm-hmm.
They have to show that there truly is a risk to the children, not simply a claim by one party who's wanting to gain within the divorce. One party's trying to make financial gain. And how do you do that? You make a claim that, gosh, the other parent's unfit. In some cases, yeah, the judge says, I want to see proof. In many cases, the judge doesn't even want to consider that I might say, you know, you can't prove that parent's unfit, so I'm going to give both of you equal custody. And, you know, Lord forbid, one case in 1,000, one case in 10,000, something might happen. That judge is going to get hung out to dry. So his decision is going to be, you know what, I'm going to take away from one parent, give to the other on a mere allegation. And if that's wrong, well, gosh, you know, I can always fall back on, well, I had a charge laid before me, and I had to protect the interest of the child. It's not.
And ultimately, you know, that's what they'll say it comes back to, is that we are mandated to operate off the best interest factors, the best interest of the child.
Right. And we need to get back to realizing the best interest in most cases, is that child know both parents and spend time, reasonable time, with both parents.
Right.
Which is the part that we have to get the judges to realize.
Well, and there's another factor that plays into that too. I should say there's another area that's never considered, or should be more broadly considered, is the fact that if you have the participation of both parents on a more equal basis, you have responsible parenting. You have parents that are going to be, they're going to understand the dynamics that are occurring with their children. It's not going to be the responsibility of one primary parent to carry the entire load. It comes back to parental responsibility, and this is the key we're missing in the aspect of rearing our children, is that they're typically through either divorce or never married scenarios. We've got children that are growing up with either one parent or no parent. They're growing up in foster care, or they're growing up, you know, thankfully, if they were placed with a relative, you know, they're at least in the bloodline, but that doesn't happen often enough either.
Yep. Yeah, and it definitely, I mean, it definitely has an adverse effect on those children. I can guarantee it to you. Yeah.
What kind of adverse effects personally have you seen, Robert? What's been your experiences?
Well, I know of one case. I'm not going to really get into the case. I know of a gentleman who was raised in a single parent household, and it's affected him adversely. And because he's dealing with some legal issues right now, really unrelated to that, other than on a just on a periphery, he's dealing with post traumatic stress issues from combat, and has some legal matters. I'm not going to really address that case until after, you know, until it goes to trial. But I do believe that the absence of a father figure certainly did have an effect on this individual, on his total psyche.
Well, the statistics sure bear that out. They haven't done any statistics too much on the under-involvement of moms, for obvious reasons. They haven't needed to, but
you got to have a pool of cases to study, and I'm not sure there'd be enough cases of absent moms to do a valid study.
Actually, I think there would, but the cultural presumption is that, well, moms are there, and if they want to be, nobody's going to take them out of the mix. But the fact of the matter is, in my estimation, that it would come out the same, that whether it's a dad or whether it's a mom, and certainly they have statistics to bear it out in what they've researched with dads, that it triples, it quadruples, sometimes 10 and 11 times more, depending on the particular area of measure you're talking about. But the suicide rates of teens, the pregnancy rates, the incarceration rates of adults that have grown up without a dad figure or a consistent dad figure, mental health issues, acting out issues, anger, it all bears out. It's glaring, the amount of significant amount of kids who are more at risk for those types of things, that are coming from homes with underinvolved dads versus those kids who have an actively involved father in their life. And even the groups that protest against shared parenting being made a presumption in courts don't disagree that, yeah, it's better for kids if dads are involved, but, and that's the buts, you know, they just seem to come in with all this just crazy nonsensical protests that really don't bear much of much evidence at all. So
yep.
We appreciate what you're doing up there in Lansing, and in our day, we believe in our lifetime that we are going to see these trends continue. Would you agree, Robert, that there are
absolutely
trends?
I won't stop. I won't stop until I see it change. I'm in this fight for the long haul. In fact, I'm as of June, I am no longer in the system. My support stopped in June, but I'm still going. In fact, my oldest son just got married this last weekend, and I was very happy to hear
congratulations.
The father
That's
of the
great.
Bride,
yeah.
You know, just so happy about how responsible my son turned out to be. And I think part of that was because after the divorce, he, over his mother's objections, continued to stop out and visit me on a regular basis and kept me involved in his life. Now, my daughter, she was a little younger. She was a little more susceptible to the. I haven't spoken to her other than, you know, we didn't even speak at the wedding, because her mom has so convinced her that, you know, well, I'm evil reincarnate. And I'm hopeful that some years from now, that she wakes up and realizes, you know, where things are at, and you know, maybe there'll be a relationship. But I basically, as a result of this system, I've had to basically come to the reality that at least for the time being, one child has ceased to be a part of my life.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
That is the type of thing I don't want to see continue. I want to see that there be a valid and just reason that any court should take these kind of measures.
Would you agree that there's some better trends occurring in family court today, though? More progressive judges, more progressive thinking to the pendulum swinging to more of a shared parenting presumption.
I'm seeing some pressure. I'm seeing a lot of politicians are starting to acknowledge that. Unfortunately, the ones that are controlling things right now still don't seem to realize that. But I do see in the community a lot more people realizing the damage that has been done historically by those kind of judgments. And I see the pressure growing every year. I think within this decade, we'll see it gone. I see some other states actually starting to pass very positive laws. So, hopefully Michigan and some of the powerful legislators coming in look at what some other states are doing, which seems to be how all legislation gets moving, is when you see another state pass a law and you look and say, hey, that makes logical sense.
Mm-hmm.
When we can see another state pass a law that says both parents, as a general rule, need to be involved in the child's life significantly for the best outcome, some of these Michigan legislators will say, hey, Pennsylvania or Ohio has done it, and it has not. We haven't seen, I don't even want to fathom what all these advocacy groups, the fear factor they throw out, but we've seen that this hasn't happened, that the sky hasn't fallen. And old legislators will start saying, hey, it's time we step up, we do the responsible thing. We take the state out of the child's life, put the family back in the child's life, and Michigan becomes a positive family state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I think is interesting about this conversation is you realize for, 150 years or so, Michigan was in the forefront. Everybody compared themselves to us. Why is it not? Do you think that now we're trying to compare ourselves to other states? I mean, we should be. We've got such talent here, Robert and Larry. It just amazes me that we're of the mind now that we're going to wait and see what other states are doing.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm seeing already some other states have already put laws on the books.
Yeah, I know.
We're already behind. We're too late to be the leader.
Yeah.
There's no sense in trying to play a panacea that we'll be the leader. We're going to be the – now the question is whether we're in line behind the first state or the 49th state. Are we the last state to make a positive change in family law, or are we going to be the second or the third state?
As it's going right now with with the way that Lansing operates in the last few years, we're going to be the absolute last.
That would be, looking historically, I'd say yes. I think we're going to see a lot of positive change after this coming election.
Your mouth again, brother.
I'm actually a former union treasurer, so I would consider myself fairly Democratic. But when I decided 2 years ago, three years ago, when I decided to run for county commission the first time, I looked at Democrat and looked at who was stalling all the pro-family legislation. Says that's out the books. I can't in my mind, I can't balance running as a Democrat against what they're doing to family law. I looked at Libertarian 2 years ago. All they were concerned about was, are you for legalizing marijuana? I said, no, sorry, I just can't do that. So I had to say, you know, and in the years, in the 3 years since, I've come to realize, you know, they say they're pro-business, and yeah, they are pro-business. Republicans are pro-business. We're foreseeing the job creators actually create jobs. The unemployed guy, even, you know, the guy making minimum wage, likely not going to create a job. So we do have to help business. But the Republicans have been the party that's been helping the family, that's been trying to pass family-friendly legislation. And so that's where I looked at my pocketbook and said, you know, pocketbook or family? Family's what's important. You protect the family, the pocketbook will follow. And so I've made that decision to run as a Republican. And I think this year's election, we're going to see a movement towards the Republican Party that I think will make this a much better state. And I'm hopeful. I've made enough connections within the state capitol that hopefully we can get a very quick start in this next session of the legislature, getting the equal parenting bill introduced on day one, getting the governor's office behind equal parenting on day one, and getting this moving so that Michigan in 2011 can get this fixed.
Well, you know what, Robert? I don't know a whole lot about the two candidates for governor. I mean, I know what I've heard, a little of what I've researched, but I certainly know Brian Kelly. And as you stated, he is a true man of integrity, a true man who
yep.
a champion of family. He gets it. He understands it. He's signed some of our bills and actually authored a couple.
Yep.
I can't say enough good things about Brian Kelly, as he's stood up for advocacy that what kids need, that kids do need both parents. And
and absolutely. And I have discussed that with Brian, and I know. I mean, because he's the lieutenant governor, not the governor, he can't state any policies, but I am confident Brian will make sure that Rick Snyder understands the importance of family, the importance of protecting the family unit, and he will make sure that this is a very high priority in the governor's office.
Yep, absolutely. No question about it. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I sure am. That's great stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm certainly positive, and I want all listeners to know that, you know, even based on my comments, you know, prior in the broadcast, I'm certainly positive about the aspect of a Snyder Kelly, you know, type of leadership in the state of Michigan as it compares to some of the sorry leadership we've had in the past. That's for sure. And you know, we desperately need to uphold the sovereignty of family in this state, and you know, in addition, you know, uphold the aspect of, you know, children need both parents. You know, it's so sorely missed in this state, and we can see the effects of it. I mean, just go drive the streets at 10 o'clock at night in virtually any community, and you'll see the effects of parentless kids.
Yep, absolutely.
But you know, and Larry can certainly talk to the fact that, you know, what's the result of children growing up without the influence of a mom or a dad, and you know, what's the onset and what's the result, you know, as it pertains to our society as a whole. You know, Larry, speak to some of that, you know, as it pertains to, you know, the use of drugs and alcohol and, you know, the pregnancy and the things in that order.
Well, you know, as we talked about, the statistics are just glaring that when kids are missing a father's influence, a father's healthy influence, on a consistent basis, those types of behaviors are exacerbated. I mean, just exacerbated to a glaring degree. Why? Well, you know, I've had a lot of kids tell me, I'm not sure. I don't know, but I'm just walking around with this real empty spot right here, you know, in their heart or in their gut. it's I'm missing something. Yeah, I'm missing what I'm wired to need, a dad. And what's a dad's influence? Is it authority? Is it affirmation? Is it guidance and modeling? It's all those things. And when a father is missing, so is a child's platelets for what it's supposed to look like to have some sort of consistent stabilization in their life. You know, we talked earlier, Dave, about DJ and his confidence. I think I've created a monster, quite frankly. But that's, you know, while DJ is wired for certain things, without my affirmation and his mother's as well, without our belief in him, he has a real difficult time then believing in himself. With our belief in him, and more than just lip service, but spending the time to help him believe in himself through our own belief in him, well, then he's able to go out here in life and negotiate a lot of things. And not only is he able, he desires to do so. So does Rebecca. So does any kid who has parents that are encouraging them to do so. Now, I'm not talking about demanding them. I'm not talking about browbeating them or threatening them. I'm talking about, hey, I love you. And here, evidenced by what? You love me evidenced by what? Evidenced by I'm here. Not that I'm paying child support, though, you know, if kids know that you're spending money on them and once they get the idea or the concept of money, it helps. But not based on, you know, I've, you know, put some stuff away for you, and as soon as I get done working, you know, I'll explain the importance, and I paid this much for this and this much. No, kids want time. Kids need to experience that they mean something to you because you take the time consistently to give it to them. And when they don't get it, you can rest assured that they will go out looking for those voids to be filled in other ways. And as we know, when you're angry and you're acting something out to fill a void, I don't care if you're 3 years old, if you're 33 years old, or if you're 103 years old, that's when they end up in my office, Dave. It's the human element. What's motivated by anger usually ends up being destructive. And whether that's a teenage girl looking for love in all the wrong ways and she ends up pregnant, a teenage boy who doesn't set limits for himself because, again, it's all the wrong ways. It's motivated in ways that aren't constructive, that aren't right, and he ends up impregnating her. Whether it's aggressive behavior because they're angry. And what's anger, as we've educated on this show before? Anger, to all you listeners out here who are downloading the program, please understand, anger is a secondary emotion. Anger is not primary. It's covering something else. It's motivated by something else. Something else like fear, primary. Hurt, primary. So you got a hurt kid. You got a hurt kid, and what's he do? He acts out, and it ends up destructive. So I hope that breaks it down, but that's why, you know, it's like a rudder on a ship. Guess who the rudders are? That's us. If we're not a rudder for our kids, then they don't know how to guide and direct themselves in any way that's meaningful. And God only knows, you know, what kind of waters they end up in. That's our job, is to be rudders for our kids, to teach them how to create their own rudders and negotiate relationships and negotiate life. We got to be there for our kids.
Well, we've just about exhausted this hour of Biff Radio. Really happy that Robert Kerr could come on and talk to us about some of these matters to do with family in the state of Michigan and how the Political Action Committee for Dads and Moms is, you know, affecting and working effectively with legislators, lawmakers, and judges, and even the front of the court, for that matter. Robert, very pleased that you were able to take the time out tonight from your personal campaign running for county commission over there in Ingham County, and wish you the best with all that.
Well, thank you.
And we will We'll wind things down for tonight. And Robert, thanks for adding a lot of value to our program tonight, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for putting the show on.
Take care, Robert.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, and Larry, tell you what, we've covered a lot of ground tonight. Certainly there's, we got a statewide elections going on. We got, governor, we got attorney general's office, we got secretary of state, and a lot of local, elections going on. And just want to encourage our listeners to go out and at the very least, if you don't have candidates that you're favoring, go study the candidates. Find out what they mean to you. We've had some candidates on this show, and most recently we had Kathleen Ryan, who's a probate judge in Oakland County. And she's walking the talk, folks. She's talking shared parenting. She's talking, hey, show me, if I'm a judge, show me why these two parents should not be equally involved in the children's lives. And I'll tell you what, that's the type of thinking that we need to raise healthy kids, Larry.
No question about it, Dave. Absolutely agree with everything everything you said on that regard. And, Dave, I would only add that if you are favoring a particular candidate, understand why. Understand what it is about that candidate, she or he, that is really causing you to believe that they're going to bring something better to the table, something better to the political process that's going to have a positive impact on the lives of the children and adults of our great state, or whatever state you may be in. Research, be informed. Voting is some of the most important things that we do, and so it's important to be informed and not just to walk in there willy-nilly. And encourage everybody to get out and vote. If you want change, you got to be part of the process in creating that change. And if you're not, don't complain. Don't complain later on about how things are if you didn't take the time to do the right thing and make a difference.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry, and you mentioned an interesting word, change. That word was used so many times in the prior election, the prior national election, and I'm gonna introduce probably more appropriate word. How about reform?
That is a good word. Yep.
We change. Now that can bring some bad change as well as some good change. So what we need is reform. That means that we'd be looking at these processes and these systems and saying, how can we make them better? How can we effectively make decisions on behalf of families, on behalf of children, on behalf of parents that will not only affect on a more micro level, but also on a macro level. So that we would be able to more broadly affect those in our state and those in our nation. Let's face it. This is not a phenomenon that just occurred overnight. This has been going on for a number of decades. And so this comes down to the policies, right, that have been put in place.
Yep, that is very true.
Well, and so these policies and the systems that govern them need to be reformed. Everything from the judicial side of things to the legislation that goes into place. Robert was on to talk about that on our show, and, how the legislation is written, how it's interpreted, is where the rubber meets the road. The legislation and the laws need to be more concise, needs to be understandable in more layman's terms, so that there is no broad interpretations.
Yep, it's defining those terms and executing them in an appropriate way that really is going to make the most impact on people's lives. And people need to understand how it is being defined and how it is impacting your life based on on those people making those interpretations, because quite frankly, as we talked about, positions, not just governor and Congress and senator, but probate judge, these are positions, Tom, in county government. These are positions that really have even more immediate impact on your daily life. So you need to be informed. You need to understand who it is that you're voting to elect.
Absolutely, and don't just depend on a piece of literature that are going to get in the mail. It might be favorable for a reason.
Yeah.
And just look at who it was sent to you by. Okay, that's all you got to do in most cases, and you'll find out the information on that. But you know, get out and I know that Larry and I do this. Not as much as we'd like to because we have very busy lives and we have our children to raise, but. You know, get out there and meet these candidates. There's venues for them. They're accessible. And this is about the only time they're going to be this accessible before they get elected. So take
That's
advantage of it, folks.
That's a fact. Yep.
And so we're going to wind things down tonight. We had a terrific program with Robert Kerr from the Dads and Moms of Michigan PAC. And, you know, certainly we would be remiss if we didn't mention Dads and Moms of Michigan, the organization that has a brick-and-mortar building over about a half a mile from the front of the court in Oakland County now. So it's good to see that there are some programs being put in place, and they're going to be helping out families in all areas, everything from parenting time to child support to rearing children and classes on parental alienation and how to be better parents. You know,
in fact,
gosh.
Dave, on Monday evenings now, Dads and Moms of Michigan in that very building that you're speaking to is running support groups now. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. Free support groups in addition to the once a month free parenting seminar, that's occurring at a number of different venues that are at the Eagles clubs. The Eagles clubs of Michigan have been instrumental in supporting Dads and Moms of Michigan and providing a venue. And I believe that the next coming meeting is going to be in Waterford again. I believe that would be November the 6th, if I'm not mistaken, would be the first Saturday of the month. And those meetings are held from 10 o'clock until 12 o'clock. Best place to get information on that is to go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. And, there's lots and lots of information about the issues that you may be having with raising your children or with the friend of the court or with the court system. And certainly at these free seminars and free meetings gives you an opportunity to, in many instances, talk with someone who's very knowledgeable in the law, in the area of law, like Attorney Michael Thomas. And I know we've even had judicial candidate Kathleen Ryan, who has been very forthcoming with some with information, the price is right, it's free. There again, we had an individual named Pierce. I'm trying to recall his first name. He was an attorney that was at the last meeting. I believe it was Dan Pierce, if I'm not mistaken.
Dan Pierce, that's right, Dan.
And, he did a fabulous job of
phenomenal family law attorney, very
yeah.
good, and does mediation as well.
Yeah, and we had a round robin discussion. It was very casual, that's a good setting, a good venue for getting questions answered, and bringing up some sensitive personal issues as it pertains to their own personal cases. And so I think that people come away very satisfied with the answers and the guidance that they're getting, so that they at least feel a little better knowing that they're networking with folks that truly care about their situation, in addition to knowing that there are caring parents out there like themselves that are trying their utmost to create that and carve out that time that's desperately needed for them to provide their legacy going forward for children.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry, let's call it a night, and we want to thank all of the listeners out there that download our program. Certainly hope that you're finding value in what we're talking about on our broadcast, and welcome your feedback. And next Tuesday, God bless, and we will see you then.
Good night.